Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top quality combat sport equipment tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farm Box Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.
Greetings, fellow humans. Welcome to the BS Show, the only podcast in Atlantic Canada focused on martial arts and combat sports in this region. Mr. Trash Canyon, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great, buddy. Kind of crappy weather. I don't know if it's ever going to warm up in this part of the country, man. I'm sick and tired.
What the hell is it with winter in May?
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. I had a winter jacket on all day today.
Yeah, I know. I thought that I saw something tonight saying down in Cape Breton they were thinking about canceling BJJ this evening at Zombie Proof because of snow. That's just ridiculous. There's no excuse for that.
I was talking to the calculator earlier today. He's devastated because he can't wait to take his shirt off and walk around. Having him crazy.
For anyone who doesn't know what a calculator is, that's Mr. Steve Goodfellow. Look him up on Facebook. I'm sure he'd love the attention.
Yeah, for sure.
Listen, I tell you one thing. The sun was definitely shining on the guys up at the NUMA Cup on the weekend. We had those guys on last week to talk about the big judo tournament they were going to have, and they pulled off an unbelievable tournament. I know you dropped by for a little bit in the afternoon, right?
That was a lot of fun, Boyd, and I got to say that you honestly really brought something to the forefront that I didn't know about, and I think a lot of other people didn't know about, and it's a wonderful sport. I had a fantastic time there. I could not believe the amount of competitors that were there, and I really knew nothing about the sport. I mean, you pretty much had to explain it to me as we went, but it's great. It's fantastic. It's for people of all ages and in all walks of life, and I can't say enough good things. That was a great, great tournament.
Yeah, it was a great vibe there the whole day. I volunteered and offered to help them do a little bit of the setup and whatnot, so I got to see sort of the whole thing as it came together. And they had over 240 athletes show up from all around Atlantic Canada, and even from St. Pierre and Miquelon. I don't know if many people know what that is, but there are two small islands off the south coast of Newfoundland that are actually a part of Europe. They're actually they were historically French colonies. And if you go there, it's completely unlike North America. You've never been out to that part of the world, have you, Rick?
No, I haven't, but I'm quite familiar with those islands.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how different the culture is considering they're so geographically close. But they even sent over a team of a dozen or so athletes, and, I mean, it was just an outstanding event. There must have been probably as many as 500 people in the venue watching and participating. And I tell you, they really, really did it upright. They had an enormous amount of volunteers, and Jason, when he was on the show last week, talked about how strong a community there is around his gym, and it was so easy to see that in the venue that day. So if anybody is in Halifax and they want to know a little bit more about judo, absolutely get your butt out to Spryfield and check out Nova United Martial Arts. I'm sure they'd love to see you coming. And like you said, Rick, it's a sport that's kind of, I guess it waned in popularity there for a while. And like you said, there's misconceptions out there, people coming in wanting to know the judo chop. I told Jason you were disappointed you didn't get a judo chop lesson.
Yeah, I've already passed one, though. I've got one now. It's all geared up.
Good stuff. You'll have to demo that the next time I see you.
Yeah, for sure.
But with the prevalence of judo coming into promotions like the UFC and a lot of the other MMA promotions now, and people seeing how the judoka are able to sort of control where a fight goes like we discussed last week, I think you're going to see more and more people looking for judo instructors. And I heard a little rumor that one of the big judoka in Nova Scotia is actually going to be popping into Titans over the next little while and maybe working with Pete's guys. So that's pretty exciting stuff. I think maybe you and I can steal a little tiny bit of credit for that one.
Yeah, you know, I was sitting there, and I scratched my head, and we were leaving, and I was thinking to myself, and I know I keep going back to this, but I was thinking to myself, why isn't this stuff taught in schools? Like, I watched that, and how many hundreds of kids there were there, all well-behaved, all disciplined, all competing, and it was fantastic. And you know, what do they teach them in schools? Dodgeball? Like, come on. Like, this stuff is top-notch. And, I mean, just it's not violent. It's athletic. You're learning throws. There's some ground stuff there. It's all points, all classy. Man, oh, man, I shake my head sometimes. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, Rick, I agree with you 100%. We said this at the end of last week's show, but, I mean, it's important enough that we should kick the show off with it this time, too. And that's when we talk about using martial arts to combat bullying, we're not talking about teaching kids how to punch and kick and go out and hurt somebody that might be trying to intimidate them. We're trying to give kids self-confidence and a feeling of self-worth that they can get through accomplishing things by earning belts and by learning skills in martial arts, that they don't feel intimidated by bullies. They have this self-worth that makes them no longer feel like victims and no longer feel like they have to be to feel bad when a bully says something to them. And, I mean, like you said, it was evident with all the kids down as young as age 5 and 6 who were stepping out there on the mat. They were competing in some cases against kids that they'd never ever met before. Win, lose, or draw, they stood up, they bowed, they shook hands at the end. And you know what? When they got off the mats, they were the best of friends, and they were running around there and having an absolute ball. And I agree with you 100%. Our education system could do a lot worse than having that kind of an atmosphere brought into the school system.
Yeah, it really makes me think that some of these people need to go out and experience some of this stuff and get their head out of their ass and get in the real world and see what's working and not working out there and put it in the schools, because stuff isn't going well at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so much more to it than that even. And we're going to have our first guest on very soon, but if you'll indulge me for just a second, I'll tell you a quick story about little Miss Annika. The night before the tournament, she's 6 years old, and the night before she went to the tournament, she was actually crying in her room, and she said, "Dad, I'm more scared than nervous. I don't think I want to go to the tournament tomorrow." And I just sat down on her bed, and I said, "Listen, you've put in all the hard work. You've trained at the judo club. You've learned all the things that you need to know. Tomorrow is all about going and having fun. So you don't have to worry about anything about going in there and enjoying yourself and having fun." And then she was happy with that. And the next morning, she was obviously nervous, but she went through with it anyway. I could see the look on her face that at times she was wanting to back out. But she stepped out on that mat. She did it, and she has talked about nothing since. I mean, that is an important, important, important thing for a kid to learn. It's the old thing that you see floating around on the Internet all the time. Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is the ability to push forward in the face of fear. And kids learning that at age 5 and 6, man, how could anybody argue with that?
Man, that's awesome. I mean, next time I have a personal dilemma, I'm going to call you, man, because you sound like a modern-day Bill Cosby. That was great.
I brought you into this world, son. I could take you out.
Yeah, right on. So listen, we got big news about our boy Chris Kalaitis this week.
Absolutely,
huge.
We did. Yeah, sure. Do you want to talk about him for a quick sec?
Well, no. I mean, I just wanted to bring it up. I mean, we got some huge news, and as far as I know, you've contacted him. We're going to bring him in just to talk quickly, but what do you know?
Well, I know that they were trying to pull together a fight with him and Adrian Woolley out west after Adrian lost his fight with Eric Wilson. And it didn't work out, so I felt kind of bad for him. And I did pump out a bunch of stuff on our The BS Show Canada Facebook page and our Twitter. And Chris noticed that, and he got back to me and thanked us for helping promote him and said he was starting to get quite a bit of attention. And then lo and behold, I got a message from him a couple of days ago. He has been offered a fight with Bellator.
Well, can we get him on the line here right away? And just, I know we don't have much time here, but, I mean, can we just get a couple words from him tonight? Or
yeah,
is that possible?
Actually, I think he's there right now. Mr. Chris Kalaitis, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey.
Didn't take us long to get you back on here, brother.
Not at all, no.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster few weeks for you.
Yeah, it's yeah, been, and more so the last few days, but yeah, the few weeks too, thinking I had a fight, trying to get a fight, not having a fight, and then having one, and just trying to jump through the hoops that I've had to do the last few days have been trying, but yeah, we're almost
there.
Yeah,
absolutely. Get into a little bit of the details around there. Sort of how did this all come about? Because I know the they weren't able to pull things together for you to fight out in Alberta against Adrian. So how did this Bellator thing come about?
So Adrian, his fight got messed up with the one out west, and then him and I were trying to line something up together to fight in Toronto on the show, on the SCC show. The end of May, their commission said I didn't have enough experience to fight him, so they kind of put a kibosh to that. And then a little birdie called me and told me, about a week later, going back to Thursday now, that I should get in touch with Bellator because they had some fights that dropped off, and I should look into fighting. That they were looking for some guys, so we put the call in and made the arrangements. And since Thursday to now, I've been, jumping through medical hoops more so because it's a different commission, so they require different things. Plus, I was in the middle of getting my license redone, my annual license here in Nova Scotia. So I'm still haven't got the stamp of approval, but all the tests are done, and it's just, the final stamp, but should be done here in tomorrow.
That's fantastic.
Chris,
I hope it all works out.
Trash,
go ahead, Rick.
I got to jump in here, Chris. Trash here. Brother, you got to explain this to me. They said you didn't have enough experience
To fight Adrian Woolley. Yeah, I guess that's their commission. They've done this before. I 100% disagree. Everybody disagrees, but the head commission, and that's cool. So I'll go there, fight this guy, beat him up, and then there's other options, right?
Attaboy. Well, just keep pushing her, brother, and I want to tell you that we're all proud of you here. We're all wishing you well. Local boy makes good, and, man, you deserve it. Go for it, and everybody here in the mixed martial art community has got your back, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
I tell you, when we started this podcast, and we said it in the first few interviews we had when we were having guys on, is we really wanted to get the word out there about you guys so people could learn a little bit more about you and what you're doing, so that when you got to the bigger shows, we were able to kind of go along with and enjoy that journey. And I tell you, it didn't take you very long, so it's fantastic. I did a bit of research on your opponent, Malcolm Gordon. And, man, it looks like a fantastic fight. That guy looks like a very, very, very solid opponent. What do you know about him so far?
Yeah, man, he's by far the most well-rounded fighter that I've had the chance to fight. He's got good jiu-jitsu, good stand-up. I know where he trains. I know who he is. I've seen a couple of his fights. So, I mean, I know what to expect. I mean, you never want to just judge a book by what you've seen, a few months ago. Guys are always in the gym and always advancing. So I expect a more improved version of what I've seen from him.
Yeah, and I mean, he wouldn't probably have the benefit of a whole lot of tape on you. So you kind of have that to look forward to as well, because you fought so infrequently in the past couple of years that, I mean, your game is probably miles ahead of anything that he would have had an opportunity to see.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I don't broadcast any of my fights per se. I mean, the only ones that are out there are ones that are out of my control now. Imagine the ECC one, and then maybe the one from Montreal when I fought at Instinct, because that was a pay-per-view then. But I mean, I do try. I don't like to broadcast because, the element of surprise is always there to take if you can hold on to it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, what he has and what he doesn't have, like you said, I mean, he trains out of Adrenaline Training Center, Team Tompkins in Ontario. So, I mean, he's in there every day with Chris Radecki and Sam Stout and Jesse Gross. So, I mean, it's not like you're coming in against an inexperienced guy or somebody who doesn't know what's coming. So, I mean, it really is going to be sort of a pick-em fight against two extremely high-level guys who is really going to set the tone for what the 125 division looks like in Canada. And for us to know you personally and have you go out and do that is fantastic. I hope the commission stuff hasn't been too much of a distraction for you, has it?
No, I mean, I've taken short notice fights like before, like previously 2 weeks or something like that. But this has been like you know, 7 days. And most of that, I mean, really all you can do is do your medical and then you're in a weight cut. So you don't have a whole lot of time. I mean, it is what it is. So you mentally haven't really, I haven't really thought a whole lot about the fight per se to get stressed out about the fight really, because you're just worried about trying to get approved to actually fight.
Yeah, well, you know what? That might actually work to your advantage.
Yeah, you never.
Hey,
know.
I've been
I'm
there,
pretty chilled when
it
comes to this stuff. Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
What was that, Rick?
I try to stay pretty chilled.
Sorry, Chris, go ahead. I thought I heard Rick jump in there. You go right ahead.
So yeah, no, I try to stay pretty chilled when it comes to, you know, preparing for a fight and whatnot. Like just mentally, I mean, there's only so much you train and you're in shape, and that's why I try to stay in shape all the time, so when opportunities arise, you take advantage of them as much as possible, right? I'm not one of these guys that are in the gym, you know, 1 or 2, 3 days a week when you're not getting ready for a fight. I like to be ready all the time, and then you just pull the trigger and go.
That's fantastic, man. Well, I'm glad you were able to join us at least for a few minutes. We didn't want to get too much in your way because we know you have a lot on your plate, but we just really wanted to make sure we got you back on here and we're able to wish you the best of luck and let anybody who wants to support you, whether that be financially through sponsorship or if they just want to wish you well or maybe head up and see the fight to get in touch with the guys at the gym or get in touch directly with Chris and support him any way that you possibly can. Good luck, brother. We'll be following
for sure.
You for sure.
Okay, guys. I appreciate the support. Thanks.
Good luck, man.
Exciting stuff to see, eh, Trash?
Well, absolutely, man. You know, when you have a guy that's coming out of our neck of the woods, he's going to make the shot for the big time. We all got to rally behind him, man, because, you know, it helps all of us and it puts us all on the map. So great guy and tough guy, so I think he's going to do well.
Super. We were originally going to have a guy on tonight to talk pretty extensively about fighter sponsorship. And that was Ricky Goodall, and it didn't work out. He had a bit of a family emergency tonight, so he's going to do that another night. But you and I were chatting, Rick, and you said you had some thoughts around the whole sponsorship issue as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it was actually Chris that brought that up to our attention. And it wasn't just him. It was a couple other guys. I remember Walker mentioned it, too. We started doing these interviews with these guys, and they were talking that, you know, we said to do a shout-out to your sponsors, and some of them actually didn't have sponsors at that time. So that's when it started rattling around in our brain a little bit that, you know, that's something we hadn't really talked about before, and it's a big part of the business that, you know, you need financial support to go through your training and that type of thing.
What's my plan?
And you have these guys that come in and they get trained in fighting and they're concentrating on fighting, but they haven't really picked up the skills in the other departments and how to go about it. So we felt it was important to talk about a little bit. So where Ricky can't come on, and Ricky's a master at this stuff. We all know that. He's, you know, he's been doing it for years, and he's actually written papers, hasn't he, Boyd?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's posted blog articles telling people how to get sponsors and how to manage those sponsors and how to make sure sponsors get return on their investment from athletes. And yeah, he's pretty experienced in that stuff. And he will come on the show at some point to break that down for us. Just he wasn't able to do it tonight.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, so where he's not here, I think probably you should do like an interview with me. I'll step in Ricky's place, and you can ask me. So I would like to have like a proper introduction first, like you do with the rest of the guests. So let's do that first.
Oh well, I am immensely happy that we're able to have Mr. Rick Trash Canyon Doyle with us this evening. He's a mainstay of the Atlantic Canada sports entertainment industry. 10 years as a professional wrestler in the region, made a unusual switch over to mixed martial arts from pro wrestling, and has had two fights in the ECC promotion and is continuing his career, even though he's exceptionally aged and decrepit. How are you this evening, Mr. Trash Canyon Doyle?
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Boyd, long-time listener, first-time caller. So it's a pleasure to be on here and give you my insights.
Well, Rick, in your experience, how does one go about creating a personal brand so that they can attract sponsors? What are the things that an athlete needs to do in order to make somebody want to give them money to help them pursue their dream?
Well, Boyd, you hit it right on the head there when you said this is a brand. So the way I look at it, and you've got to look at where my background comes from, is a lot of the pro wrestling. So I was very used to promoting myself and getting my name and my face out there, because what these guys have to understand is that the more recognized you are, the more asses you can put in the seats, the more money that you're worth. And you need to attract sponsors in order, because none of us can really afford to do this at this, you know, at this level, you know, without some sponsorship help. You need.
What are the big expenses that an athlete in your position incur? Because a lot of people don't realize that it actually costs anything to fight professionally.
Well, I mean, you have your basic gym costs. I mean, so you always have to pay for your gym fees, or if you're taking a special training camp, or you want some extra tutoring, you have all those fees that you need to pay. You also have all the food expenses. So your food changes dramatically through getting ready, going through a training camp for those 6 or 8 weeks or whatever you're doing. So, and you know what? It's great to live on ravioli and Kraft dinner, but that's not going to cut it. You've got to buy good foods that are very expensive. You've got all your supplements as well. And, you know, there's also time off of work and medical appointments and those type of things and all your medicals. All that stuff costs hundreds of dollars, and people don't understand that. So sponsorship is very important. But if there's
that's a great one, Rick. I'll jump in for just a quick sec around the medicals. I mean, commissions are different all across Canada and all through the United States, because they're both state and province run. And if you want to get passed to fight medically in somewhere like Nova Scotia or Ontario, it's many hundreds of dollars. And if you're over the age of 35 or 40, I mean, you're talking sometimes thousands of dollars if you get into CTs and MRIs and all of the many, many, many tests that they want run, and sometimes every 6 months or every year, correct?
Well, yeah, and there's different things depending on, like you say, what province you're in, what your age is, and all these things cost a lot of money. And here's what I want to tell people out there, that if you're going after sponsors, okay, I always say you can answer to, you know, some people answer to whatever God they believe in. I answer to sponsors, okay? Those are the things that keep me, sponsors keep me on the straight and narrow, because when you take a sponsor on or a sponsor takes you on, you have to remember, you have to represent their product, their company, to the best of your ability. Otherwise, you're not going to invest their money in you. So that's very, very important. And if you look at yourself and you say, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do this fight and I'd like to get some sponsors, look around for the type of companies that you feel that you can represent well. And you know, approach those companies. And you have to do up a very nice, remember that one you did for me, Boyd? Maybe we can post something like that as well. Have something done up. Have it professional and go up and hand it to those people, a biography on yourself and what you're looking for and why you're looking for it, and hand those off to companies. They're more likely to support you. And I'll tell you, some companies can't do it, or they've never done it before. Don't be scared. If you want to align yourself with that company, if you feel there's a future in that company, or even if you support what that company does, put them on your banner. Put them on there and just say, listen, I know you can't afford to pay me this time, or you may down the road, bring them on as a sponsor anyway. Represent their company. That'll pay for you in the end. But, Boyd, I want to tell you something here before we get off track. I need to bring on somebody, you don't even know about this, but this is a guy who does more sponsorship probably in Nova Scotia than anybody in mixed martial arts, and you know him very well and I know him very well, Jerome Wilson. Jerome, are you on the line?
I'm on the line.
Aha, there he is, there's the man.
Hey, Uncle Jerome, how you doing?
Good, I got Pete right beside me.
Glad
really
you could join us, man.
I up there, didn't I, Boyd? I messed you up.
You did.
There.
You did. I couldn't be happier to hear somebody else come on the line than Jerome, let me tell you, because like we said before, we wouldn't be able to do what we do without that guy.
No, that's for sure. Jerome, thank you very much for taking this show or coming on the show on short notice. And I didn't tell Boyd about this on purpose just because I like messing with his head all the time.
Yeah,
but we were going to do the show on sponsorship, and we're going to have Ricky in to talk about it a little bit. And unfortunately, you know, we couldn't get him there at the last minute. But I said, let's bring Jerome Wilson on, because, Jerome, you are a guy that supports an awful lot of MMA in Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada. And I want to know why you do that, and why you support the sport and the fighters themselves.
Well, I actually started when I was at Palookas. I met Peter Martel at Palookas, and I was training with Peter, and he actually asked me to help out Roger Hollett that was in New Mexico at Greg Jackson's camp. So that's when I started into it and got involved at that point. Then, you know, you meet all the people. Then you have the kids coming to the gym and the young kids going to the gym. And then I got involved with the ECC, as you all know. And so basically the success of certain fighters attracted me to sponsor them. It made it easy to sponsor, basically based on their success level. You know, you want to be part of the team, right? So, you know, and as ECC is growing, it's also going to make it easier for the fighters to get sponsorships because of the crowd enthusiasm and, you know, the growing, like the ECC is holding more fights, and we're going to look at more locations to hold fights. So the fighters are going to become more well-known, so that they're going to attract people on their own. You know, someone that might take a liking to the way they fight or the way they train or dedication. For instance, I got a fellow like Gavin Tucker, for instance. I sponsor him. And my brother also sponsors some TRX training for him. And, you know, it's because of the intensity that he trains at, the dedication and what he sacrifices to train to be an MMA fighter. And so you have to love sport, too, to also get all these feelings, right, and desire to help and be part of it. But basically, their success and their dedication attracts you to be a part of their team and what they're doing. Now, I sponsor amateur boxers like Bianca Paquin. I think that's the way you pronounce her last name, but I sponsor her from time to time also. And there was a fundraiser down at Cyclone Cycling for her. You know, there's a, you know, but basically fighting sports that we're involved in, and I grew up around fighting sports, so it's easy to get, you know, kind of be, you know, involved with these type of people.
Now,
you know,
Jerome,
I'm not a churchgoer or anything, and everybody has to belong to something, right? And that's kind of like my church at these fight gyms, right? And
now,
so that's my part, right?
Yeah, I hear you. Now, before I hand you off to Boyd there, because I'm sure he has some questions and the interview will go downhill dramatically, can you tell the fighters out there, Jerome, that are looking for sponsors, you know, what can they do? Like, you're a company owner. What can they do to try to attract a company to sponsor them? What is their best approach? What advice can you give the fighters?
I'll tell you the best formula is to take fights and to fight and to do good fights and show dedication in the gym and not be like a partier or, you know, someone that's out on the town and on self-destruct on their off days or whatever. Someone that's dedicated to their sport and take fights. If you take fights, you're going to get noticed. And if you train hard, well, obviously you're going to be taking bigger fights as you go, and you're going to create excitement at the fights. So, and that's attractive as a sponsor to be part of that winning team. That's my main thing. Like a Gavin Tucker, for instance, total dedication. You know, Roger Holland, right? You know, knockout power hands, and, you know, he lived through, you know, he has a fight history, his father, and, you know, and his brother's in jiu-jitsu heavy, or everybody's involved, and you know, so the best thing for a fighter who wants to get fighter sponsorship is sign contracts and fight. That's the biggest way to get them. Get
awesome.
Yourself out there.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much, Jerome. Boy, did you have any questions there for Jerome before he took off?
No, you guys absolutely nailed it, Rick. That was great. I really love what Jerome mentioned about that. He said he's not a churchgoer, but everybody needs something, and I think that's a real key to this as well, is being part of the community and helping out, whether it's volunteering like we saw at the NUMA tournament last week, or sponsoring athletes, just like Jerome said, like, because you want to be connected to what they're doing. And if it's somebody who's real serious and they're not out partying and wasting their money and wasting their time, but actually doing everything that they can to pursue their dream, if sponsors are in a position to them, give them the extra little nudge that are going to get them closer, that's what it's all about.
I agree. Jerome, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Well, listen, man, before you go, I mean, I'll give you an opportunity to say whatever you'd like before you go, but I just want to say personally, thank you very much on behalf of the MMA community in Nova Scotia and Atlanta, Canada. What you do is fantastic because you sponsor all different ages, all different skill levels in all different sports. And you were one of the first guys that I met when I was up here that said to me, it doesn't matter what gym you train in. That doesn't mean anything. We're all one. We're all the same. We're all doing the same thing, and we're all trying to improve. And it's your attitude and your support that has been a big help in this mixed martial art community. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Cheers. Did you have anything that you'd like to say before you go off? And I appreciate you coming on short notice.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. It was great talking to you. And hopefully I'll see you around at maybe jiu-jitsu tournaments. I'll definitely see you at the ECC events. And, keep up the good work with the show. And hopefully we can contribute again sometime.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jerome.
Thank you.
Well, you know what, Boyd? I'm sorry, buddy. I dropped that bomb on you. You didn't know I had Jerome waiting, but I love messing you up because you're so organized. But what a great guest, right? What a great guest.
He is a great guy. He's a great guest. And for anybody who doesn't know it, he actually made his pro MMA debut on his 49th birthday and got the W, too. In quick and impressive fashion. It was do you remember what the atmosphere was like around his fight that night at that venue, Rick?
Yeah, absolutely. We captured that on Cubicle to the Cage.
That's right, Cubicle to the Cage. I think it might be like episode 8 or 9. The roof damn near came off that place. I think every second ticket holder was there to see Jerome and Jerome only. It was a hell of a card.
And, I mean, here's an example of a guy that doesn't really benefit, like his company, Wilson Titanium. I mean, they're into the heavy welding and that kind of thing, that doesn't really directly benefit from sponsoring, and yet he does it. But, listen to what he said there, folks. If you want to go after sponsorship and you approach a company, you better be serious. Be a serious athlete. And it doesn't matter what level you are, but if you take it as serious as you can and you say to these folks, I am going to train as hard as I can and I will represent your company to the best of my ability, that's the trick to getting a sponsorship from a company.
Yeah, absolutely. These athletes need to realize that when they take a sponsorship, no matter how small, they are now an ambassador for that company, and they have some serious obligations to behave in a certain way and to make sure that they bring value to that sponsor's brand as well as to their own brand.
That's the higher power I listen to.
Okay, we have our next guest lined up. Obviously, longtime friend of the show, guest we've had on before, Peter Martel. How are we doing?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Oh,
hey,
good,
Professor.
Good, Pete. Pete, I'm glad you came on the show tonight, especially when I pitched to you the topic we wanted to talk about tonight, because I think this is probably one of the least understood aspects of the fight business, and that is the business of fighting. And we're going to have another guest join us in a few minutes, and I'm going to leave it to Skippy to invite him, but he's another MMA promoter. So I wanted to get both of you guys on the phone so we could have a little chat about what it takes to run a promotion and to have it be successful and all the challenges that come with trying to do that. So could you give us just a quick history of your life as an MMA promoter, which I think began in 2005, 2006?
I started trying to get sometime late 2004. succeeded around the beginning of 2006 and held our first show in April.
Whoa.
I think we lost you.
Are you still there, Pete?
I'm still here.
Okay, we missed that last thing you said. If that happens again, we might have to get you to switch over to Jerome's phone.
Okay. No, I was saying we got the fights going in the beginning of 2006. So we just had our 8-year anniversary there last month.
Almost a decade in the business.
Almost, yeah.
Well, Pete, for people who really have like zero idea of what this all takes, what are some of the major financial burdens or the financial challenges around promoting MMA and running MMA events?
Well, I guess the big thing about it is you have to put up a substantial amount of money and hope that enough people show up that you get your money back. And if you're lucky, enough people show up that you actually make some money. And, you know, depending on the market you're in, I mean, if you're in a large market, you know, you get better odds of doing better. Your advertising dollar goes further, reaches more people. If you're in a small market like we are, you know, it's a little more risky. The costs don't really change whether I'm doing it in a big city like Toronto or I'm doing it in a smaller city like Halifax. It's just that I have, you know, a much smaller population to market to. And my marketing dollars go are less effective. So, again, every time you put out, you know, say it's $50,000, you know, you've got to hope that you are going to pull enough people to make that money back. And sometimes you do. Sometimes you make a little bit of money. Sometimes you lose some money. Sometimes you break even, so you work, you know, 2 or 3 months for free. So, basically, if you don't love sport, it's an awful kick in the butt.
Hey, Coach,
no doubt about it.
I'd like to jump in just to ask you for a sec. Could you just give us an idea of the costs that are affiliated with this? I mean,
Rick, can I pause you for just 1 second? Because our other guest is online, and we'll be able to ask the question once and then let these gentlemen discuss that and give both their perspectives.
Oh, okay, fantastic.
Skippy,
hey,
you want to bring in our guest?
Oh, I definitely do. Boyd, Rick, and Peter, hands down on the West Coast, the number one promoter of both pro boxing and pro MMA, consistently has the best cards that you guys can find. He is, like yourselves, very passionate about the sport. I'd like to introduce Brian Hallquist from Hallquist Promotions to the show tonight.
Well, hi,
guys,
Brian.
How are you?
Welcome to the show. Oh, thanks so much for going on short notice. We appreciate it.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Brian. Rick was just about to ask a question to Pete, and we'll fire that question to both of you, and you can take it in turn. But we're trying to educate people, the average fan who perhaps dumps down money at the Buffalo Wild Wings to watch some UFC on a Saturday night but never really thinks to go and support local mixed martial arts. What are the financial burdens? What are the things that cost money for being able to put on a show that you guys need to bankroll if you want to promote MMA?
Let's start with Coach Martel. Let's take it on this side of the water here first, and we'll go from
okay,
there.
Okay, guys. Let's start. First of all, you've got to get your lineup, which means that you're looking at purses. So you know, you've got to show and to win, and you've got to take in the worst case scenario, meaning that the highest purses win all the fights. So that's a substantial cost. Your next thing you have to look at is transportation. You've got to get your talent, your fighters in town. So you've got to fly them in, or you're paying gas. Beyond that, you've got to pay for hotels and per diem. You've got to pay the commission, the doctors, the official sanctioning fee. You've got to pay for insurance. You have to pay the venue. You have to make sure you've got staff to, you know, set up, tear down, provide everything that goes into the actual running of the event. You've got advertising, printing, I mean, the expenses just go on and on and on. So it's it really is quite a list that goes into any production. And anybody who puts on any type of show, you know, the thing about putting on, a music professional, often what they'll do is they'll start that show in British Columbia, and they'll hear Alberta and, you know, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Quebec, Ontario, New Brunswick, PEI, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and they'll anchor those shows in each city so they get a great deal. You can't do that when you're doing MMA. You've got not one star, you've got 20 stars that you have to pay. So it's a little bit different.
And Brian, looking to you to chime in. I'm sure you face many of the same challenges that Pete does when you're trying to bankroll shows.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when we started 89 with Joe Hip, and so we bankrolled that show ourselves. We were successful at it, but, you know, it was a first show, and there hadn't been a show in the town for a while. But, you know, as we continued promoting Joe, you know, we ran into, let's put it this way, I learned the hard way along the way. But you have to learn really quick. Or you don't succeed because, hey, Pete, I haven't had a chance to say hi. I follow your shows all the time, and I was glad to be able to be on the show with you.
Yeah, well, same here. My pleasure.
And so, anyway, you know, you know, you have to learn quick because when you're putting on a show yourself and bankrolling it, like you've got the arena, so you have to know how to negotiate with the arena. Properly, because they're a city entity usually, or privately held, and they're there to make money. But you have to learn how to negotiate that, and then you have all your costs of the show, which is like you've heard earlier. You have the state, you have doctors, officials, you have taxes on top of that, and then a big expense is marketing, and so you have to pull everything together. To this day, I still do the old-fashioned marketing and promoting. You know, we. Do posters around town. We do flyers, handouts. So, you know, we are still the Barnum and Bailey kind of guys, but we actually promote. We know the market well for media, and so we pulled it all together now after all of these years, after, you know, 30 years or whatever it's been. But there is a lot to it, and you have to learn it very, very quick if you're going to get into it because, like Pete said, you can lose a lot of money on just one show.
Yeah, I've talked to Peter about this an awful lot over the past couple of years, and one thing he always says is, like, he's put together what he thought were fantastic cards before, but they were just stinkers for losing money. And then he put together other cards where he's like, oh, well, I mean, I got my card put together, but they ended up being financially successful. So it is a very delicate thing, which sort of leads me to my next question, which is, how do you really decide which fighters you're going to put on your cards? Because you can't always go out there and sort of get the biggest name if those guys have gotten to a point in their career where they're demanding a fair amount of money for a regional promotion. And Brian, I'll throw it to you first. How do you sort of pick how you're going to rig your cards in terms of high-profile fighters, entry-level fighters, guys just getting in the business?
Well, you know, what we've done over time now is we've developed where we're, you know, you see some of our cards, we have 8, 9, 10 kids that are pro debuting because we're so deep in talent here. So we're always bringing kids on, or we're bringing MMA fighters on, and developing them from the start. If you look at Brent Knopp, for instance, he's our champion. He'll be fighting the next fight, our main event. You know, what's happening so far is we're developing these guys, and then they become our champion if they're good enough. And as you saw with Anthony Hamilton, a week ago, he signed with the UFC. He was our heavyweight champion, and we've had a number of our champions and people who fought on our shows move on. So we're in a situation now where we're looking for the talent to develop as they turn pro and develop here, and what we're finding out is people are good enough on our shows. They seem to be good enough to get signed by Bellator, by the UFC, and, you know, a number of other the big shows that have taken our champions. So, you know, I think we present ourselves as a springboard to the fighters. I think we have a track record now showing that, you know, if you become a cage sport champion, there's a good chance that you're going to go on to a big show. So that's kind of how we're doing it now, and it seems to be working really well. We've got, you know, as you know, all of our shows are sold out, and it's a very exciting time for us right now.
Pete, that that's a sounds like a pretty good parallel for your history with the people that you've had go up through the ranks of the ECC and then be fighting now in the UFC. And, well, we just had a fight around a few minutes ago that fought on Pete's last show and just got drafted to Bellator this week. So, Pete, I'd like to hear your thoughts on sort of how you design your cards and how you choose which fighters get to perform on your cards, whether it be high-profile guys or guys who are just trying to get their first fight on a local promotion.
You know, I used to matchmake and matchmake for fights that I wanted to see. And you know, again, very quickly learned that that's not necessarily the best business practice. The fights that I want to see aren't necessarily what's going to put the, you know, the asses in the seats. And you know, and that's a shame. What I found is that sometimes, you know, these shows rely on support of, you know, the MMA fans. And what happens if you don't have an MMA fighter from a certain gym, that gym doesn't turn out. They don't show up to the fights. What they don't realize is that if your fights don't do well and there's no fights, those guys aren't going to be getting any fights down the road. So what you've got to do is you've got to get these guys out to support the fights on a regular basis, whether their guys are fighting or not. You know, you've got to, you know, if you're a fan, you're a fan. Come on out and support the fights. What we try to do is we try to get new talent like that. That's the direction we're going now. We're trying to go to all the clubs, say, hey, give us your rising stars, and you know, we'll do our best to promote them and do something with them. The bottom line is if someone is doing well in BC, they're not bringing someone from Halifax to beat that guy up. They want their guy to do well. So if you bring someone in from another province, you're basically bringing them in to get beat up. That's what you hope. I want the guys from here to do well because they're going to sell tickets, and we want to build them. They're our guys. So if I have a fighter like, say, Chris Kaladis from Dartmouth, and I bring in a fighter from Quebec or somewhere, I want that guy to lose. It's good for business, it's good for Chris, and it's good for our promotion. You know, and that happens sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't. That's, you know, the luck of the draw. But again, the trick is to build these guys and get them known and get them to be followed. And, you know, that helps get them sponsors and helps get them the crowd behind them, get them excited. And we've been very successful at that as well. We've had several fighters go to the UFC. I mean, our current champion, we've got Elias Theodoro, who just won the tough title is our champion. You know, and it goes back to a card we had a little while ago. I mean, we had David Loazo on. David Loazo is a huge superstar in MMA, but we had terrible attendance. And, you know, that begs the question, you know, what's the secret formula? Why can we put Joe Blow from Dartmouth on and get, you know, 500 more people than when we have David Loazo? David Loazo is an exciting fighter, had a knockout that's got 500,000 impressions on YouTube at our fight. You know, how come the MMA fans weren't there to see that? That's, you know, that's the big question.
That is absolutely fantastic, Pete and Brian. I can't thank you guys enough for that. And it ties completely into what Jerome was saying off the top of the show, what Rick was saying when he was talking about sponsorship earlier, and what Jack Cameron said when we had him on talking about the fighters and athletes that he sponsors the other day, is fighters need to understand that when they're creating a brand, that's not just for attracting sponsors, it's for attracting people into the venues to watch them fight. If nobody comes out and watches the fights, then there is not going to be any promotion, or there's going to be a weak promotion. And a weak promotion is not going to be able to offer opportunities to fighters and not going to be able to certainly offer high-level opportunities to the fighters as they increase and improve their records so that they can move on to whatever that next level is, say a Bellator or a UFC. So I think it's unbelievably important that you get that message out there, Pete, that you mentioned, that if a gym has 100 members and they don't happen to have a fighter or two on the card, they need to get out and support the local promotion anyway. And I've said this, I'm sure, a dozen times on this podcast already, but if you can go out and spend $50 to drink lukewarm beer and watch the UFC in a bar, then you can sure as hell get your ass down to support the local athletes that are sweating and bleeding and crying in the gyms that are around you in Halifax or whatever region you happen to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been to the UFC and, you know, I've been to a lot of local promotions. And, you know, it's all about the matchmaking. You can have two guys who maybe aren't as good as UFC fighters, but they're going for it, man. I'm telling you, it's exciting seeing these guys go at it. And it's great to support these local guys because one of these guys may be the superstar in the UFC down the road. You know, that's the thing. Just one thing I've learned about the business of promoting MMA, and it's a parallel with promoting a fighter and getting a sponsor. Sometimes you get a fighter who is so dedicated, his whole complete focus is on training, and he doesn't take the time to market himself. And sometimes you get a promoter whose focus is on putting on great fights, and he doesn't do a great job or doing it as a business. And one of the things I've learned is it's got to be a business. It can't be about just necessarily putting on the best fights, and that's unfortunate. We don't have the budgets of, say, the UFC, who can just make great matchups. But, I mean, even Dana White's been guilty of putting on matchups that are going to sell tickets rather than the best fights. I mean, look at someone like Tito and Shamrock, you know? I mean, really, three times.
Not a whole lot of
rivalry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what puts butts in the seats and still sees views, and we've got to look at that sometimes as the way to run the business. And fighters out there, you're dedicated, you're training hard, you've got to take the time to market yourself and get out there and give yourself exposure to the right people and keep plugging away. You ask 100 people and two or three of them say yes, and you're doing great. Ask 500 people and, you know, you start to make some money.
I'm going to jump in here just for a second, and I love this show because this is a topic in MMA that's not really talked about an awful lot, and it's the business behind it. And sometimes the business is, you know, you guys have to make decisions as promoters on what's best for your business in order for it to continue and grow. So what we're seeing, and I may be wrong in this totally, but what we see are generally people that are in their first fight, second fight, third fight, or even the amateur fights, tend to draw more people to the shows on local MMA shows than somebody that fought 10 times. Because all their family and all their friends and all that type of thing are going out to see them. And so the guys higher up on the card who start to look for more money can't necessarily get that from the promoters. So that's where their skills in getting out and getting sponsorship in order to make the money that they want becomes very important. So I got one question before I hand you back over to Boyd, and I'll start with you, Brian. If I'm a fighter coming to you and I'd like to get hired on or get booked with your promotion, can you tell me what you look for when you're contacted by a fighter, whether or not you make a decision you put him on the card? And second of all, is there any benefit to teams of fighters coming to your promotion? So in other words, if I call you and say, listen, there's a group of us that can travel up there from this neck of the woods, is that a benefit in getting booked as well? So I'll hand that to Brian first.
Yeah, you know, one thing that Peter said that's so important is your matchmaker. I have two incredible matchmakers. I have one for boxing and one for MMA. And, you know, what we've done is, you know, we have not signed any fighters. We're basically saying, come use us as a platform. Good things are happening to our champions. I've match made in boxing before and tried doing MMA, but I think, again, I'm smart enough to know that you have to hire somebody that's very knowledgeable, reputable, honest, not always easy to come by, but Rich Guerin, our matchmaker, is incredible. And so anyway, if somebody is to contact us, they'll contact me or Rich. And, you know, Rich is so in tune with all of the gyms out here because he's an amateur promoter. He promotes amateur shows. Ours is an all-pro show. But so Rich is so in tune with everybody here that he knows who's turning pro, when they're turning pro. And we do work with teams all the time. Matt Hume has fighters on our show. I mean, Ivan, Brian Johnson, I mean, all the gyms really in a four-state area have fighters on our shows. And sometimes we have, so many fighters to choose from, it's a problem for me because I want to get everybody on the show. You know,
what can I do as a fighter to get your attention as a promoter, to get that fight booked with your promotion? What can I do?
Okay, number one, you're going to be with a decent fight camp. And we, for instance, I had a guy call last week who he's two amateur fights and he wants to turn pro. He's an independent. You know, we will not work with an independent. We want somebody who's going to be in a gym and he's going to have some amateur fights and we're going to know who he is, because fighter safety is very, very important. So they're going to be with a reputable coach, reputable team, and have to be at a level to come in and be entertaining on our show. The bottom line is that people have to remember this is entertainment. It's no different than watching a movie or a football game. We're supplying entertainment, and you know the athletes that you bring in have to be able to supply that entertainment. And that's usually through good skills, and that's what we're looking for.
So, sending teams from a region, is that a benefit from a promoter's standpoint? From your standpoint, if someone calls you from, let's say, an area a few hundred miles away and says, we can send in a group of three or four guys from this area and they all travel together, is that a benefit as a promoter?
Oh, we've done that before. For instance, the Dog Pound in Great Falls, Montana, especially early on, they would bring three or four guys out, and we knew who they were. They're a good, reputable club. And the benefit was they were dependable, they were incredible fighters, and we could use all of our local guys against out-of-town guys. So we weren't putting on the two local guys at first. We were able to bring in other guys. And we still do that to an extent now, but our formula now is using the guys locally, which is west side of Western Washington. And then we try to match them with people from the five or four state area, which is Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. And again, because we're trying to build these athletes' fan base, and to do that, we have to get them on shows. And I think if you see our shows now, you see, we've got our champions, but you're also starting to see some of the guys on the undercard more because we're starting to develop talent. And we have not signed anybody, but we are working on that right now. So there are benefits to bringing a team in, but our formula is changing a little bit now. But if I was starting out, I would definitely want to bring teams in like that, because usually you find those teams, you use those gyms that are very good and dependable, and they fight for a fair price if you put everybody together. Transportation costs are down and stuff like that.
Great. I'll bounce that over to thank you very much for your answer. I'll bounce the same question over to you, Professor Martel. I'm a fighter trying to get on an ECC card. There's a lineup as long as my arm of guys that want to get on your card. What do I do as an individual to catch your attention and get booked on the upcoming show?
Well, thankfully we are in a position where we do shop around for fighters. I mean, before when we first started out, there were so few fighters, it was like, please come and fight for us. And now it's, we don't want that guy, he's too boring, I'd like to help him out, but he puts the crowd to sleep. And again, it is entertainment, so we do need to keep the people coming back to keep having shows. So you have to be exciting. That's a big part of it. Be exciting. You can't be someone who's not entertaining once you step into the cage or step into the ring. If you're an entertaining guy, we're going to want to have you there. A second thing that's important is you have to put, butts in the seat. You have to be a draw. I'm not going to spend $5,000 on a big-name fighter if he doesn't put an extra, single person in the arena. It just doesn't make any financial sense. And those days when I used to think, oh, great, I'd love to have that guy. I don't care if he sells. Those days are gone. That's just the reality of it. And again, if you want to be on a card, be exciting and sell some tickets.
And is there any benefit to your organization if you're contacted by a group of fighters from an area that say we have a whole team that wants to carry in? Is that a financial benefit to you that you look for?
Well, we used to do that a lot. The bottom line is it takes a large chunk of your headache away when you can get a team. You've suddenly matched up a whole bunch of fights, and, especially from a great club, their medicals are going to be done, they're reliable, they're going to show up, they've got skills, and you're going to have exciting fights. So that is a huge benefit. Now, on the other hand, we've been burned where we had a team sign up and they didn't get their medicals in time. They missed the deadline. And we have suddenly four or five fights canceled. Your card is you know, screwed. So that becomes a problem. If you suddenly have something that goes wrong like that, if something goes wrong with the team, you've got a major problem. So you're kind of putting all your eggs in one basket. So we've kind of gotten away from that. And the other, and this is an evolving sport for us. One of the things that we've kind of drifted toward now is away from the teams, because the more variety we have, the more, I guess, of a diverse fan base we attract. So if we bring in four guys from one team, that fan base is kind of narrow. So if we bring in four different fighters from four different, you know, areas, then we've attracted a wider fan base. So what we try to do is we try to get the local guys from our area, from Halifax, Dartmouth, Edward Sackville, where I'm at, from Nova Scotia, from New Brunswick, from PEI, from Newfoundland, to fight each other, because these are the fights that people care about. You know, sure, they care about Mike Kent fighting David Loazzo, but they're a lot more excited about seeing John Smith in his very first fight against Joe Blow, who lives, you know, 10 miles away, trained to a different club. You know, that's where the excitement's at, and we like to see that, because these guys go for it, and, you know, maybe one of them is going to go all the way and get to the UFC or get to Bellator. And, you know, that's the bottom line for us. We want to be able to put these fights on and develop talent, basically without losing our shirt.
Yeah, Pete, well,
that was a great point that you made, and that was, you know, if you bring an entire team in from farther away and you lose a guy, you do stand to lose a whole car full of guys. And I actually did that. We did save a couple, but that it can be a disaster. It can kill a show. So that I'm so glad that was brought up. But, you know, we're talking about promoting, and we've been talking about entertainment stuff. The most important thing I've learned in my 30 years is the most important person in the arena is not the athlete, it's not the promoter staff, it's not anybody except the guy who paid money to sit down. And that's the thing everybody has to remember. And to do to service that person right and keep them coming back, you have to have quality fights. And, you know, I just want to say that because I like to say that if we're ever talking about promoting, because I think it's really important to know, you know, it's the fan base that's coming in and paying to see that. That's the most important person, and that's who we're trying to entertain.
Well, I thank you both for coming on here and discussing this topic, because one thing that Boyd and I realized very quickly is that a lot of these fighters had no concept of that they are a brand and they need to market themselves in order to grow. It's a skill that they need to develop as they go up the ladder, and if they do, they are more successful. So I'll hand it over to you, Boyd, but thank you very much, gentlemen. I think this will be insightful to a lot of the MMA audience and the fighters themselves.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rick. I think this is hands down the best show that we've done on the podcast thus far. I knew there was potential here just from conversations that I'd had with Peter before, and Brian, your insight has just been absolutely fantastic. I think this thing is going to get shared all over the damn internet when it's over, because this is not something that I ever heard talked about widely on a podcast or a radio show before, but it's information that young athletes and gym owners and wannabe managers and coaches have to know. They have to understand this stuff, or they're just going to have an immense uphill battle ahead of them if they're trying to promote a fighter and get them on the cards that you guys hold. So I just absolutely can't thank you too enough for coming on and sharing.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be on, and nice to finally say hi to you, Peter.
Same here. Thank you very much for having me on. And I think I learned a few things from you, Brian. You obviously have been very successful and do a great job. You know what you're talking about.
Oh, thank you very much. You too. And I've been following your shows, and we're doing the same thing in different parts of the world. But you know, it's all about supplying a way for our MMA young fighters to have a platform to get to that big level. It's wonderful.
We'll,
thank you very
we'll
much.
Stick, We're going to stick close to Skippy and the guys at Madhouse, and one of these days it'll be in the cards. We can do this rap style, East Coast, West Coast, and you guys can co-promote.
I would love to. Peter, we can probably work on that, huh?
We probably should.
Well, you know what? Well, I'll get your number from Skippy, and we'll see what we can do.
Thanks a lot for joining us, guys. It was absolutely fantastic. We'll have you on again for sure.
All right. Thank you.
Take care, guys.
Wow. What can I say? What a great show.
I'm literally speechless.
You know, boy, this is one of the topics that goes on, but nobody really thinks about. And, I mean, it is the economics of actually putting these shows on. They are extremely expensive to put on. They are a lot of risk to the promoters that put on. So they have to pick their matches very carefully, and there's a lot of components that are involved in that. And, you know, whether you like it or whether you don't, a lot of times it comes down to who's going to put asses in the seats.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I sat down and just kind of tried to spitball some numbers in a small market like we have, where we're getting probably 1,000 people or less out to your average MMA show, and trying to add up, okay, what are the costs? You got 10,000 for this, and you got 5,000 for that, and a few more thousand for this. And I'm thinking, man, there's no meat on the bone really left if you're in a very small market and you're promoting MMA.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're a fighter, or if you're a member of a gym, you need to get out and you need to help sell tickets, and you need to put as many people in your facility in these events in order for them to keep going. Because if they don't have people in the seats, they can't have shows. So you got to get out there, and you've got to peddle it to your friends, and you've got to say, please come support this. And, you know, we hear bitching about ticket prices. These are professional fighters, folks. They, you know, they have bled, they have sweat. You know, they deserve the money that they make for that fight. So don't ever bitch about a price of a ticket, because it's not all going in their pocket. It's supporting this event, which is extremely expensive. Extremely. They need to have the medical professionals. They got to pay all these people. This is you know, a very expensive sport to have on. So you have to touch friends to get out there.
And something that we've done already, I mean, we touched on BJJ and we touched on judo, and we're going to hit a few more of the traditional martial arts over the course of the year. But Peter pointed out earlier that MMA is a sort of a new sport, and that's 100% true. And one of the things that happened in the early days of MMA was it was segregated very much from the traditional martial arts, because it was sort of one against the other. And then when it evolved a little more into MMA being its own thing, sort of the MMA community turned its back on the traditional martial arts. Before Lyoto Machida came along, you heard all these people saying, oh, karate is no good. I mean, that wouldn't really work in a real fight like MMA. And then they say the same thing about taekwondo until Anthony Pettis goes and jumps off the cage and just about kicks a guy's head off. And then they were saying the same thing about judo. And then you get Ronda Rousey come along, and she's hip-tossing women halfway across the cage. And, I mean, you go on down the line with all the different martial arts. And all those people that are out doing those traditional martial arts are typically not showing up at these regional shows. And I think it's time that we educate people on the techniques from traditional martial arts that are evident in MMA at the level that it's at right now. And I think that will draw a whole new group of people in. Like I saw at the judo tournament this weekend, we had 500 or 600 people there for amateur judo. And that's the kind of numbers that we're pulling for some of these local professional MMA shows. So I think that's an audience that you and I are going to try to tap and get a few more people interested in MMA, because they can see the martial art that they pursue in its pure form, how it's used in an MMA fight.
Well, I like what Brian had to say. He said his organization is a platform. So if you want to see these local guys make it to the big time, which they can, we already discussed that earlier tonight, and we've had a lot of it from here, they've had it from the West Coast, this is where these guys come from. You need to support them. If you're a fighter, you got to get out there and pound the pavement. Part of your job is putting people at these events, or there's not going to be a venue for you to fight at.
Absolutely. Okay, let's wrap this sucker up. But before we do, I got a couple of quick community announcements to put out there. I was speaking to Mike Foley at Foley Martial Arts in St. John's, Newfoundland, and they have a martial arts tournament coming up next Saturday, May 10th, at the Bishop Abrams School, and that's going to be both a jiu-jitsu and a sport karate tournament. I don't think they have legalized mixed martial arts or combat sports in Newfoundland right now. I know there's some guys over there working on that, and I believe Michael is one of those guys. But he does do an awful lot, and his entire family actually does an awful lot to promote and grow martial arts in Newfoundland and Labrador. So if you're around the St. John's area and you're able to get over to Bishop Abrams School on Saturday, go check out some stand-up in the karate tournament if you're into that. And if you haven't been exposed to BJJ and grappling, then you definitely want to go check that stuff out. Also in St. John's, Newfoundland, 8-Limb Muay Thai and MMA has a special coming on for any new members from May through to August. So get your butts in there, and you can get an absolute sweet deal on the number one place to try to train MMA in St. John's.
Can I throw one in there as well?
Give her.
Because our good friend, the calculator, has been working very hard on this, although I think he might have a bit of an ulterior motive. He's trying to get ladies in to get Brazilian jiu-jitsu into these classes. Okay? I'm not saying there is an ulterior motive here, but I think his heart's in the right place. We need to get more ladies out to these classes. I firmly believe that skill would be of a lot more interest to a lot more ladies if they actually got out there and gave it a try. So all you meatheads out in that gym, I want you to think for 1 second that when a female walks into your gym, you want them to feel welcome when they walk in there. You don't want them to feel intimidated in any way. I'll tell you, if you're a guy and you walk into a gym for the first time, you can be nervous. You even talked about it yourself, Boyd, how nerve-wracking that can be. You imagine if you're a female walking in for the first time and would like to learn that martial art, but you're walking in, you're nervous and you're scared. So you people listening, when you have somebody new walk into your gym, you treat them with respect and dignity because they're going to be nervous, and make them feel comfortable because this is a damn good sport for people to learn, especially the females.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple of points to that, Rick, is, and I would even go further to say, any guys that are in a gym, if they see or hear a guy ever say anything that would make a woman feel uncomfortable in the gym, to definitely have the balls to pull that guy aside and politely remind him of where he is and what's going on and the way that they should conduct themselves. Because, yeah, absolutely we want women to be able to go to these gyms and learn these skills. And, yeah, I absolutely agree. Two things I want to pitch out there right away is, go on YouTube and look up Henner and Eve Gracie talking about how to train with the opposite sex for BJJ. Absolutely fantastic conversation between Henner Gracie and his wife about the do's and don'ts and the things that you want to do and not do when you're training with the opposite sex. Just an absolutely fantastic conversation that they had. And the other thing is, I think there's a WTF, a Women That Fight organization that's trying to do some open mats in the Halifax area, Halifax, Nova Scotia area, to pull women who train BJJ at several gyms together. So they're not necessarily doing a tournament, but sort of a precursor to a tournament where they can have women's only open roles a few times a year. And that's absolutely fantastic. So look into that as well.
Well, I mean, any of the gyms that we've visited around here, that's not even an issue. You know, they're very friendly. They're very – that's not going to be a problem. But what I'm telling people is get it into your head to go out and actually approach somebody and say, would you like to give this a try? I'll come along with you if you would like to, because it's very important you do that, because that first step to get somebody in a gym can be very difficult, and everybody can think back about their first trip into a gym. It is nerve-wracking. So make that effort. It's a great sport, and I'd like to see it grow with women. We saw that in the judo. How many women were competing in that judo tournament? So there's a lot of ladies that might like to give this a try. Put your hand out and reach out to people and help them try this world out.
Great call, Rick. Skippy, thank you so much, brother. I think this is probably the most important show we've done, if not the best show.
Skippy's asleep, I think.
Skippy's asleep at the wheel? Yeah, he's frozen.
Well, we can just wrap it up ourselves, I guess.
We'll peter off into the silence.
Right into the sunset. I got my cowboy hat on, so. So anyway, how do you sign off with those Skippy? I have no idea.
I have no idea. Like I said, we're just going to have to let this sucker peter out, and we'll give him hell next week for falling asleep on board. Oh,
so
thanks a lot, Rick. Like I said, just an absolutely fantastic show tonight.
Yeah, it was totally impromptu, but, hey, we got through her.
Yeah, I mean, 5 minutes before we went on air, we didn't have any guests.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you're on a live podcast, right? It's
But, I mean, yeah, we will have Ricky Goodall on sometime pretty soon, because I know he has a lot of information to share with fighters around sponsorship and promotion as well.
Yeah, not only that, but nutrition as well. He's a nutrition specialist.
I got a whole spiel done up. The messiah of the red-haired, pale-skinned masses, Ricky Goodall.
Yeah, right on.
We'll definitely give him his 15 minutes in the sun, even though we'll make him freckle.
For sure. Okay.
Take it easy, Trash.
All right, you too, my friend. Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you real soon.
Welcome to the BS Show. Are you ready to shoot the... The BS Show would like to thank their sponsors. Jack Cameron, accredited mortgage professional. Jack can show you the way home. Graco Impact Sports, providing top-quality combat sport equipment tested and used by all levels of athletes. Dominate your world. Reposales.ca, specializing in vehicle and equipment recovery, liquidation, and sales. Hemmings House Pictures, the global movement media makers, helping tell your brand story to the world and accelerate the momentum of your movement. Farmbox Films, capturing stories the way you want to remember them.